you will know as well as I do that there are all sorts of situations in life where things sometimes are much harder than we ever realised they would be. I was speaking to some friends the other day who've recently been married, and they said, you know, it's really tough. We love it. We're loving being married, but it's kind of hard. No one ever told us that marriage would be difficult. I was speaking to another friend, well, his wife actually, who took a job about this time last year. He started a new job. It seemed just the perfect job for him, but it ended up crushing him. He's now very poorly. He's had a breakdown. And I was speaking to his wife, and she said to me, you know, we just weren't told the whole story about the job. We didn't know what we were walking into. Now, that, when those sort of situations come upon us, it's very difficult to cope with. Maybe you have got a parallel situation in your own life. If an unrealistic picture or a rosy picture has been painted for us of a situation, then when it is tough, when it's really hard in that situation, we can get very annoyed. We can feel we've been conned, and we may just feel like giving it all in. Now, that is certainly true of the Christian life when it comes to following Jesus Christ. See, we have to know the true picture. It may be that you came along last week to our guest lunch and you've come back to hear more. We're so pleased that you've come. It's a big step, I think, to come to a church service, as it were. We're so pleased you've come. And maybe last week, you know, as Chris Knowles was speaking, you were hearing of this wonderful fresh start that you can have with the Lord Jesus. A wonderful new beginning. All the past wiped clean and the great future of to come. You're forgiven, the past dealt with, the future secure, and you thought, that sounds terrific, I want to hear some more about that. Well, let me say, it is terrific. Indeed, it is the most crucial thing in the world and in life itself, and not least of all in the current world climate of such tension and uncertainty. There is nothing more crucial than to know that your life is in the hands of Jesus Christ, and that eternity is secure. That is wonderful to know. But look, we also need to say the Christian life is not all easy. It's not a bed of roses. Now that's why Peter is writing this book. That's what he's been saying in these opening verses of this letter. He knows, and those he's writing to know, that if you stand up for Christ in this world, you won't be embraced by the world. People are not going to love you because you're a Christian. Bizarre. I mean, you might live a life that is far more attractive than you ever did before you became a Christian, but people won't love you for it. I mean, just tell them you're going to church at lunchtime and people probably think you're off your trolley. Actually start making a stand for Jesus and you're sure to get a hard time. Now, the Christians Peter first wrote to knew all about that. They were suffering religious persecution just because they stood up for Christ. Others made life very uncomfortable for them. And that is why Peter goes out of his way to tell them that life, the Christian life, is hard. So they wouldn't think that something odd was happening to them. No, the Christian life is hard. I've put some notes on the back of the notice sheet if you want to follow where we're going. And we come to our first point. The pattern of the Christian life, verses 10 to 12, is this. Suffering now and glory later. Let me read verse 10 and 11 again for us. Concerning this salvation, the prophets who spoke of the grace that was to come to you searched intently and with the greatest care, trying to find out the time and circumstances to which the Spirit of Christ in them was pointing when he predicted the sufferings of Christ and the glories that would follow. That is the key phrase, that phrase at the end of verse 11, the sufferings of Christ and the glories to follow. Now, these verses are packed with all sorts of things, but very simply, Peter is saying in verse 10, as the prophets are from the Old Testament, as the prophets wrote, they may not have known all the specific details of Jesus' life, death and resurrection and his ascension. But, verse 11, as they wrote, the Holy Spirit revealed to them that the Christ would suffer first and only then would glory follow. And that, is, of course, what happened with Jesus, isn't it? He had a hard life, a life of rejection before the resurrection and ascension back into heaven. The point is this for Peter. It's always been the same. The whole of the Old Testament declared that the pattern for the Messiah would be suffering first and only then glory, being raised to glory. And when we know that, that really serves us. That's what he goes on in verse 12 to say. It was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves but you. It serves us in that when we know the Christian life is tough, it helps me to know that when I'm having a hard time, that I'm not doing something wrong. We have a little cottage, my wife and I, in Derbyshire. And we have a wood burner, which we love sort of particularly when the nights are drawing in, putting on. But those of you who have wood burners know that with wood burners go chopping wood, which I don't enjoy so much. It wasn't long after we got our first wood burner that I had to chop up some wood. You know, I'm not really the great sort of strapping wood cutter that I ought to be. But I was doing my little bit, being the man in the house, trying to wield the axe. And it didn't take long before I was puffing and struggling. Well, a neighbour along the road from our cottage came walking past. And as he saw me there, puffing and struggling, I felt a bit embarrassed, really. He probably thought he could probably do it really easy. He said to me, "Chopping wood is such hard work, isn't it?" I thought, it's such a great... I mean, it wasn't from where he was standing, but it was great encouragement for me that he said that. If he'd have said to me, "Why have you gone all red in the face and breathless? Chopping wood is easy," I'd have been totally discouraged, because it was hard work. But to hear, actually, no, it's hard work was a great encouragement. I mean, it meant I still had to do the hard work, but it was a great encouragement. Now that is what Peter is doing here. He's saying the Christian life is tough. The whole of the Bible is saying the same thing. Suffering now and then glory to follow. It is great now, but it is hard as well. Now Jesus made the same point. If you look again at 1 Peter chapter 1 verses 10 and 11, you'll see these sorts of words, the prophets, sufferings, glory to follow. Well, with that in mind, keep your finger in 1 Peter and come back with me, if you will, to Luke chapter 24. And you'll see that Jesus used the same words and the same expressions to make the same point. Page 1062, 1062. We'll go straight back to 1 Peter after this, but it's interesting seeing this link with this is what Jesus told his disciples after his resurrection. Page 1062, Luke 24. In the top left-hand corner of that page, Luke 24 and verse 25, Jesus speaking to his disciples just after he's risen from the dead. He said to them, "How foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken." See, that's what Peter said. Verse 26, "Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with the Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Suffering now, glory later. You see, Jesus taught it, and now Peter's teaching it as we go back to 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 10 to 12. That is the pattern of the Christian life. But you see, that actually is very encouraging for me. It keeps me going because I don't expect life to be a bed of roses now. It keeps me going in the Christian life because when I'm going through a hard time, I don't think that I'm doing something wrong. No, actually, that is the Christian life. And it keeps me going now because even though I suffer, I know that glory will follow. I've got that to look forward to. I can look forward to the wonderful time, the wonderful future with Jesus Christ for all eternity in the new creation. And hey, how we need to hang on to that in these days when Al-Qaeda network are threatening further terrorist attacks. We need to have this security, don't we? Nothing else is secure. Well, we need to be sure of this. Suffering now, glory later. That's the pattern of the Christian life. Well, on to the second point on our sheet, from the pattern of the Christian life to the preparation, verse 13. See verse 13, he says, "Therefore, prepare your minds for action, be self-controlled, set your hope fully on the grace to be given when Jesus Christ is revealed." You see, once I know the pattern of the Christian life, suffering first and only then glory will follow, I'll prepare my mind, prepare for action. Prepare my mind for action. I'll get geared up for a tough time. The word here, prepare your minds for action, is more literally, gird up the loins of your mind. Great, I love that expression. It probably means nothing to us, but I love the expression. Today, we would say, roll up the sleeves of your mind. Oh, you know what it's like. You roll up your sleeves, you're ready for action. You're ready for hard work. You're getting ready for a rough ride. You see, that is so important in the Christian life, that we tell people that as they start the Christian life, what it's all about. My colleague Rico Tice, who runs the Christianity Explored course here, he says, "I won't ask anyone to become a wholehearted follower of Jesus Christ until they've understood the cost." That's what Peter's saying. Prepare your minds. See, it makes all the difference when you do that at a business meeting, doesn't it? Imagine you're going into a business meeting. If you've thought your way into it, if you've thought your way through all the problems that you're going to have to confront in this meeting, If you thought about the objections that will come up and how you will deal with those objections and what your response will be, it makes the meeting go much more smoothly. You still have exactly the same problems, but it goes more smoothly. It's very difficult to think under pressure, to think straight under pressure, to react the right way, to do the right thing. But if we prepared our minds before going into a difficult situation, we got far more chance of living and acting the way we should. It's what Peter is saying in the Christian life. Prepare your minds for action. How do we do that? Well, specifically, you'll see it there in verse 13. He says, set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. See, he says, think about the future. It's been the great thrust of Peter's letter so far. I can deal with the present when I'm sure of the future hope. If I'm certain of the future with Jesus Christ, it will mean that I'll live properly now. See, the future with Jesus is the only dead certain life that I have. Well, we ought to have learnt that a few weeks ago. Those of you who are sports boffings like me, I love anything sport, particularly football. I'm a big Leeds fan, actually. They won 6-0 on Tuesday, which has got nothing to do with anything, but they don't often win 6-0. They beat Leicester. And if you're a Leicester fan here, I'm so pleased to meet you. You probably won't come back to me having mentioned that. But no, nothing to do with Leicester and Leeds. But did you hear about the match that happened 10 days ago? Manchester United were playing Tottenham. And Tottenham were 3-0 up at half-time. And here's the Sports Daily on the following Monday, October the 1st, that tells us about one particular supporter, Tottenham Hotspur supporter, who at half-time rushed down to the bookies to put £10,000 on Tottenham winning. Well, they were 3-0 up at half-time. The odds were not great, of course, because, you know, they were 3-0 up. He stood to win just £600, but he thought it was worth it. £10,000, £600, quick buck. I'll make a quick 600 quid. What happened? Do you know? Man United won 5-3. In 45 minutes, Manchester United scored 5 goals and without reply from Tottenham. So there we are. There are no dead certs in this life, are there? Nothing certain at all. Well, again, you know, sort of, that's a bit trivial, but being more serious, doesn't the current crisis make us realise there's nothing certain in this life? I'm not going to base anything in this life. It's a very, very uncertain climate. Well, Peter says, no, there is one dead cert. We saw it in chapter 1, verses 3 to 5. Our heavenly inheritance. It's the only dead cert. If you're a wholehearted follower of Jesus, you can be absolutely certain of the future to come. If you're not certain of that, you'll not stand firm for Christ now. If standing firm for Christ means getting a hard time, no way I'm going to do that unless I'm certain of the future. But if I am, I'll stand up for him. I'll put my money where my mouth is. I'll put more than £10,000 into following him. See, that's how I prepare my mind for action. Set your hope fully, do you see he says there in verse 13, set your hope fully on the grace to be given. I wonder what you daydream about. What do you daydream about? Do you daydream about, you know, when your mind suddenly drifts off when you're supposed to be working? It all happens to us all, doesn't it? All the time. Always happens to me. Drifting off. What do you daydream about? A great career? Maybe a happy family? Getting married? Leeds winning the championship? Being with Jesus Christ one day? The next summer holiday? Improving your handicap? See, it's probably all of those things if you're a Christian. But do you notice that's how it happens, doesn't it? Being with Jesus sort of comes alongside Leeds winning the championship and my next holiday. Now what Peter says is no, don't let Jesus Christ just be one of many competing daydreams. He says, verse 13, set your hope fully on the grace to be revealed. Set your hope fully on being with Jesus. May that be the thing that your mind is set on, that your affections are set on, that you're longing for. Because that's the way you'll stand up, even though it may be tough following Jesus. Because that's where your hope is. When the crunch comes, when the heat is on, I'll always act in accordance with the things that I've set my mind on. So prepare your mind for action by setting your hope fully on the grace to come. That's how I'll do the right thing when it's tough. But that takes self-control. You see, that's why he says in verse 13, between prepare your minds and set your hope fully, he says, be self-controlled. I won't just sort of drift into this longing to be with Jesus. Have you noticed it? I never drift into good habits. Have you ever drifted into a good habit? I drift into bad habits all the time. I've never drifted into a good one. I've never sort of drifted into being fit. I'd love to just sort of, you know, sort of just find, you know, in sort of 4 months' time, just say, oh, yeah, what just sort of happened? You know, I just got myself all fit again. You know, it'd be great, wouldn't it? I never sort of drifted into eating properly or being polite. Or good habits don't come naturally. You have to work hard. The same is true of spiritual disciplines. You don't just drift into them. So he says, be self-controlled there in verse 13. I won't just drift into having my hope set fully on the future hope. I've got to keep being self-controlled on it, because all sorts of other things will distract me. All sorts of entertainments and trivialities distract me. I've already mentioned football twice in this talk. Why? Because sport grabs me. I set my mind on that all the time. Leeds are playing Chelsea on Saturday. I think about that all the time. You see, I've got to actually grab hold of myself, be self-controlled and say, but what about the future hope? That's far more important. It's going to take real composure and poise to have my mind set fully on that. Well then, the pattern, verses 10 to 12, suffering now, glory later. Secondly, the preparation, verse 13, set your hope fully on the grace to come. And then thirdly, the proposal. Well, I'm sorry, I needed another P. It would have been a better word, would be a command, because it's not really a proposal, but a command to be holy in verses 14 to 16. Verse 13, you see, set your hope fully on the future. And verses 14 to 16, be holy in the present. I wonder what your definition of holiness is. Maybe if you've been a Christian for a while, you'll have heard the same definitions that I've always been taught. Being holy is being set apart and being different. Well, that's okay. That you can sort of translate it like that. But those words give completely the wrong impression, don't they? Being set apart is, you know, like being withdrawn. And being different, well, it sort of sounds like you've got to be weird. So Christians end up being withdrawn and weird in the name of being holy. It puts holiness, makes holiness sound about as attractive as being a train spotter. I'm sorry if you're a train spotter here today. Now, any train spotters and Leicester City supporters will never come back. And if you're both, well, have a nice life. Well, anyway, that's got nothing to do with anything, except verse 14 tells me what holiness is all about. It's not just about being withdrawn and weird. See, verse 14 says, as obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, but, verse 15 and 16, be holy. See, in verse 14, Peter says, just think back to before you became a Christian. Think back about to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance of Jesus Christ. Just think of that, and that will tell you the opposite of what holiness is. So, I think about my own life in the workplace when I used to work in local newspapers. And before I was a Christian, how I used to work there, what was my lifestyle like? Well, it was very selfish. It was all about me and my career. It was very boastful because, probably like you, the environment that you work in means that if you're going to get on in your career, you've got to push yourself forward. You've got to be noticed. You've got to make everyone know how great you are at your job. So I was very boastful. I was very vindictive. I didn't want people to think that they could get one over on me and actually get away with it. So I wanted to get my own back so they didn't cross me again. I was very manipulative and deceitful, always wanting to get my own way because it was about me. Life was about me. Now Peter says, don't be like that, verse 14. See, as obedient children, don't conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, but be holy. Now you see, that tells me what holiness is about then. It means being the opposite of the stuff that I used to be like. So to be holy, that means rather than being selfish, being selfless. It's not all about me getting promotion anymore and pushing myself forward. Instead of being boastful, I want to be humble. Now, I've got to take a back seat sometimes, have a right assessment of myself. Instead of being vindictive and vengeful, you know, looking for ways to get back at people, I need to be forgiving. Instead of being manipulative and deceitful, you know, sort of turning things around to get them my way, I want to be open and honest. That's holiness. There's nothing weird and horrible about that, is there? Nothing weird and that's just being distinctive. Well, let me ask you, is that the sort of lifestyle you're known for at work? Let me ask it of myself, is that the sort of lifestyle I'm known for at work? Well, there's colleagues around, you ask them, and I'm sure they'll find lots of reasons that I'm not like that, but that's what I need to be like. That is impressive Christian living. That's distinctive, and that stands out, doesn't it? Well, that's holiness, verse 14. Verse 14, as obedient children, don't conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, but just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. See, being holy is not about withdrawing from the world, and it's certainly not about being weird. It's about being like Jesus. Do you see that there in verse 16? For it is written, be holy because I am holy, said the Lord. Well, how did Jesus live among us? He wasn't withdrawn and weird. He was distinctive, yes, but he didn't separate himself from the world. He was maligned by the Pharisees for spending time with tax collectors and sinners. He certainly didn't withdraw from the world. Well, it's a big challenge for us, because this sort of lifestyle, this radical Christian living, will give us a hard time. Just as Jesus got a hard time for it, we will get a hard time for it. And that is why we're always tempted to withdraw. But that's not holiness. No, he says, go in and live a life which is distinctive. Well, the workplace is a magnificent place to be Christian, isn't it? It's hard, but it's magnificent. Because 8 hours a day or more, unbelievers are sitting right next to you, seeing how you live, seeing what makes you tick. Well, verses 13 and 14 are a marvellous combination for living in the workplace. Have your mind set on the future with Jesus Christ, so that you can get stuck into this mucky world and live it in a distinctive manner. For you see, as we live distinctive lives, we reflect the character of the God we follow. That's the point of verses 15 and 16. The God we follow is the God who got his hands dirty in the world. The one who left a throne to be born in a manger. The one who left his celestial palace to live in the slums of this world. The one who left heaven itself to experience hell as he died on the cross. And all that for you and me. How amazing. What a God. He's not a God who keeps himself to himself. The Lord Jesus got his hands dirty, and the world took those hands and drove nails through them. So here's the call to be getting stuck in. To go in where it hurts, even though it hurts, and it will hurt. The world will not like it when we stand up for Christ, just as the world didn't like Christ himself. And that, of course, brings us back full circle. You know, the pattern of the Christian life is suffering now, but glory will follow, but it is suffering now. So be prepared. Set your hope fully on that future hope. And then that will enable you to live holy, distinctive, wonderful lives now, even though it won't be popular.